Welcome to another Buzz Marketing for Technology podcast conducted in cooperation with Marketing Profs. I'm your host, Paul Dunay, and today I'm speaking with Sri Srinivasan, professor of journalism at Columbia University and technology reporter for WNBC-TV. So, Sri, you know, where's all this social networking heading? I mean, my God, another social network, you know, every day seems to be coming out. Is this just a distraction in the workplace, or is it heading towards something that's much more meaningful?
I'm a big fan of social networking, having started off not being a big fan because I didn't think it was living up to the hype in the early days. But I've become a convert over the last few months and a couple of years just to see how much of a connection people are making via these networks, Facebook and LinkedIn and others. And I think that they have very useful, kind of obviously social things, but also work-related things that come out of it. And I am also seeing that some organizations are banning them from the workplace. And I think that's short-sighted in the long run.
So you think banning them from the workplace is a mistake? I mean, I've certainly heard of that. Why would we want our employees out, you know, on social networks? I mean, I've seen some articles where they're having like social media Fridays and stuff like that. What's your viewpoint on the benefit for a company allowing folks to access a social network?
Sure. Well, there are obviously dangers in the sense that people can go out and post things and you know, salacious pictures and be kind of indiscreet in what they put out there. So that requires, I think, those are aspects can be handled through training and retraining and orienting folks about what they're doing. But they could do that stuff from home. So just banning it from work, if that's the main worry, that they're going to put in things that are not don't reflect well on the company, they could be doing that at home. They could also be doing it elsewhere on other sites that you would not think of banning, or you wouldn't even know that they're on there. So I think that's why I think it's short-sighted to shut these down. The benefits are that a lot of people are comfortable using these technologies, want to use them, and are able to use them in some cases for actual work-related networking and connections and connecting with clients, for example, or connecting with prospective clients, things like that. At the same time, I can see why the people are saying, well, this is a big waste of time, the productivity issues. So you can address that, I think, with some guidelines, but not by outright banning.
Yeah, very good point. I like that. Where do you think all this blogging is leading us short term? So we're concerned about social networks. Here you've got, you know, sort of the self-publishing revolution that's going on. Do you think that's a threat to the newspaper industry as we know it at this point?
Well, I read somewhere that newspaper circulation in this country peaked in 1987. So it's very hard to blame blogging or the internet or anything else for it. To me, blogging is a tool and is one way of communicating, and it's something that people really enjoy doing and reading more than even doing. Vast majority of blogs are a waste of time, but there are some that are really good. And I say something that often gets me in trouble, and that is that in every area of human interest, there is now a blog or a new website or a Web 2.0 website that is approaching in importance or as important or more important than the traditional media outlet in that space. And what I mean by that is that if you pick anything, rock climbing, rock gardening, rock music, and you'll be able to identify a blog or a blog-like website or a new website that didn't exist before that is an important part of that field and where the conversation or an important conversation is taking place. And professionals in all these fields, marketers, others, need to know about these conversations. Because if you spend all your time thinking that the conversation's only happening at the New York Times or on Fox News or on 60 Minutes, you would be mistaken, because these conversations are now spread out throughout. And that's where being aware of these and paying attention to them is important. I am not saying that the traditional media outlets are dead or that they're not important, but these are now things you have to add to your media diet.
Couldn't agree more. Absolutely. So Nicholas Carr seems to be thinking we're contributing to this one master supercomputer, and that Google has the capacity, you know, to be, you know, not only the reputation engine for every company, but you know, sort of this world supercomputer. What's your viewpoint on that?
Through the 80s and 90s, the worry was how dominant Microsoft was and how really scared it was that Microsoft had its fingers in everything, and we saw those big anti-monopoly lawsuits and all of that stuff. Now, similar stuff is being said about Google. And I tend not to worry as much because there are so many alternatives for a variety of things. When you think of when Microsoft was dominant, and Microsoft still is dominant, it's just that it's not in as sexy or as as dominant in some of the fields that people are talking about now. That's the only reason. You know, still obviously what Microsoft market share is still incredibly high, but there's just so many more options now than there's so many more options in the fields that Google competes in than there are in the fields that Microsoft was dominant in and is continues to be dominant in. And it is true that a lot of us use a lot of Google services, including me. And but what we have also learned is that as better tools come along, people are willing to move and willing to go from one place to another. And not everything Google does is an automatic home run. And you can see that in the example of even in social networking with its ORCID system, which is successful in other countries, but not really successful here. I would say definitely not successful here so far. But I think what consumers want is convenience and good products that they can use and that make their lives better. And I am not willing to sit around and wait for something else to come along when there is something that works well now. I'm also not convinced that every product that is dominant or successful today will be the dominant and successful one, a version of it, 5-10 years from now. I had to do a story for NBC News about life in 2017. And I said, boy, if I could predict life in 2017, I'd be a very rich man. I wouldn't be working for NBC News. But what I did was I went back and created a list of all the products in the year 1997 and said, how many of these things in 1997, or what things today that are household words, terms, services I use, all of us use, did not exist in 1997? And the list was completely staggering and unexpected, at least by me, how rich that list was. So these included things, obviously, like blogs, but accessible satellite imagery, the BlackBerry, Bluetooth, a cable modem, Facebook, high-def TV, home networks, iPod, GPS. And some of these things existed, but they were not mainstream in the way they are today. YouTube, MP3, RSS, satellite radio, smart wireless phones. You know, there's just so many things that didn't exist then. So anyone who's frantic and panicking about something today is just frantically panicking, and they need to relax a little bit.
So switching gears a little bit, do you think mobile computing is the next great frontier for us, and what does that hold from a challenge perspective?
Mobile computing is certainly here already and is something that people care a lot about, and I think it's only going to continue to grow as things like the iPhone get better or its competitors get better, and more Wi-Fi hotspots, more WiMAX deployment happens around the country, And people want to be able to work and do it on the go. They don't necessarily want to do it every single part of their day, but they want to be able to do that. And you're going to continue to see that grow.
Excellent. So any advice for my marketing audience? What should they be doing as far as trying to stay ahead of the curve?
Well, a couple of thoughts. One is to really immerse yourself in the world of this new kind of marketing. But obviously, in addition to reading and listening to everything you're doing, and just thinking about new ways of connecting with people. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about in terms of the importance of trying to find new ways of connecting with people. So everybody, let's just pick, say, the food industry. In the food business, everyone obviously knows New York Magazine and its food critic and the impact that it has. So a lot of marketers, PR people, spend all their time chasing the equivalent of the New York Magazine food critic, whether it's the New York Times food critic or their local newspaper food critic. And that's certainly an important person, but that's only one example. So that's traditional media. But within New York Magazine, they have a very nice blog called Grub Street, which is one of my favorite food blogs. And then, so when I ask food marketers, food PR people, 100% have heard of New York Magazine, understand its value. 20 to 30% understand Grub Street, but only maybe 1% have heard of 2 for $8. 2 for $8 is a subset of Grub Street, which is a subset of New York Magazine. 2 for $8 is a fun little feature where at 4 p.m., Grub Street calls around to major restaurants in the city and says, "Can I get a table for 2 at 8 o'clock?" And it publishes the results so that people know when those restaurants are open. So the advantage of that is if you're a marketer, you want to be occasionally in that list. So while you're chasing New York Magazine, it's very hard to get in New York Magazine. It might be easier to get into Grub Street and 2 for $8. So you've got to understand that a lot of changes are happening. We think changes only happen in the new media, but the old media is also trying, and they're trying to do new things. So you have to be aware of all these changes happening around us. And the more that you're aware of this, the better, because you will then be able to be ahead of your competitors, who, for the most part, are so wrapped up in traditional marketing outlets, traditional rules, traditional ways of doing business, finding new audiences, that they lose a lot of opportunities. Well, one other way to think about it, and I have the kind of this food industry on my mind. You may have read that Tim Zagat is now selling, is put up his business for sale. You know, it's several $100 million business, and it's from a position of strength, and you know he's cashing out, and. You can imagine in whatever year, I think it was 1978 when this was started, and when he was calling around and talking about this, I think it was like a two-sheet piece of paper that he was going to do called the Zagat Survey, and people must have, you can imagine what disdain he would have received. He doesn't receive that now. And what I tell marketers is that there are probably 20 Tim Zagats, or the equivalent of what impact Tim had in the business, Tim and Nina Zagat, that are out there now. The problem is, do you know which ones? And how do you find out? And the only way you find out is by being open-minded, by talking to as many people as you can, by living in that space so that you can be a good judge. I also tell people, and this sort of comes off that 1997 look and 2017 look, that all the changes that we've seen in the last 10, 12 years, we're going to see as many changes in the next 10, 12 years. And the problem is identifying what's going to be the next Google, the next Zagat, the next Facebook, and what is going to be the next pets.com that doesn't go anywhere. So you are going to make mistakes. You're going to pick some wrong horses. But the barrier to entry and the price of backing some wrong horses is so low that you should do as much as you can.
Well, thanks for joining me today, Sri. I really appreciate your time. And for our listeners, now it's your turn. Please let us know what questions you might have for Sri, and we'd be happy to keep this conversation going with you online. We'll be back again next week with another ProfCast, and thank you all for listening.